God grant that I may speak in his name and in the power of his spirit. For Jesus' sake. Amen. Do sit down, please. One of the great things about coming here to Ducklington is I'm never quite certain what I'm going to encounter. In due time, I think I'm going to see the Great Loo Project finished. I sincerely hope so. And today I hadn't realised you were doing Easter Experience. And here we've got the Easter Garden and Servant King and all sorts of things. And that's all for the school coming in and anybody else who wants to use it. And that's fantastic. And it's being used in all sorts of churches and schools around the diocese at the moment. It's lovely to see all you've done for it. And it reminds us of the time of year we're into. Last week, Mother's Day. Today. Next Sunday, of course, Palm Sunday, and then on to Easter Day itself. And I want if you can just leap forward a week, as it were, in your imagination, to come to Palm Sunday, a day when we remember Jesus's entry into Jerusalem. And you can imagine all the hustle and the bustle, and there he is coming in on a donkey, and the crowds are around. Huge crowds around in Jerusalem at Passover. And that year it had an edge to it. Because just before Palm Sunday, there had been some extraordinary events at Bethany, at a village just about 2 miles outside of Jerusalem. There was a man there named Lazarus, and he died. He hadn't fainted, he hadn't gone into a coma, he had died. And he was one of Jesus's friends. And as far as his sisters, Martha and Mary, were concerned, the death of their brother was, of course, hugely painful. And as they'd seen him getting more and more sick, so they'd sent a message to Jesus, "Can you come and help?" And nothing had happened. In fact, he got the message, but by the time he got the message, texting and other things not being available, actually Lazarus had died by the time he got the message. But nevertheless, he stayed where he was for a couple of extra days, and he didn't come. And you can imagine just how anguished Martha and Mary must have been. And then he did turn up. And gets the message from them, if you'd been here, he wouldn't have died. And then, of course, the extraordinary thing happened. Lazarus was raised from the dead. The impossible happened. And that, of course, was totally transformative to Lazarus, to Martha, to Mary. But it wasn't just them. The crowds all started coming out from Jerusalem to say, "What's going on here?" I can imagine them always wanting to touch Lazarus. You know, "Are you real? We heard you were dead. In fact, we heard you were in the tomb for 4 days. And you're real. You're alive. Something extraordinary is happening here." And now, just a matter of days later, he's coming in to Jerusalem. And with the crowds who are following him are coming, we're told, some who'd seen Lazarus. And among that group, that big group of people all coming into Jerusalem, there are some people who are feeling left out. Don't know if you've ever been to a party or a gathering and you kind of feel left to one side. Everybody else knows why they're there and you're kind of on the edge. And here was a group who were feeling on the edge of things. They were a group of Greeks, so they weren't Jews, and the Passover was a great Jewish festival, but these were non-Jews who were really interested in the Jewish faith. And you found them at that period all over the Mediterranean, all around the Mediterranean. There were others saying, "What's in this Jewish faith? It's been around for a long time. What's it got in it?" And they were inquiring, they were searching, they were seeking, they were asking. And so they made the journey to Jerusalem, but they still felt out of it. tucked away on the edge, not really a part of what's going on. And so we're told in that reading that was read to us just now, they wanted to know where Jesus fitted in. And rather than coming to him directly, they did what most of us would do. They thought, now who can I talk to who'll give me an entrance? After today's news, I'm tempted to say they didn't have to pay $250,000, but follow the Sunday Times this morning if you want to know more. But what they do is they go and see Philip. Now that's a very wise move, because they've heard the names buzzing around the apostles and they realize that Philip is a Greek name. So one Greek name talking to some other Greek names. At least they feel they may have a way in at that point. And what does Philip do? Well, when they come to him and say, "Sir, we would like to see Jesus," Philip goes and tells Andrew, and Andrew and Philip in turn told Jesus. So just hold that image in your mind. There they are, thousands of people in the crowds, and this small bunch of Greeks coming to Philip, who goes and finds Andrew, and together they go to see Jesus. That's the image. And then take a flashback. A flashback, or rather two flashbacks, because Andrew's a bit of a hero of mine. If you read Matthew, Mark, and Luke as Gospels, he hardly gets a mention. He's like at the credits at the end of a film. You know, you hardly noticed he happened, but he's just about there. In John's Gospel, he's really rather significant. Things happen when Andrew's around. And the first time we meet him is in John chapter 1. And there it is, right at the start of Jesus' ministry. And Jesus is down in the south of the country, and he's walking around, and a couple of disciples of John the Baptist see Jesus. And John the Baptist says to them, "Go and see that man, because he's the one I'm pointing to." And one of those two is Andrew. So off they trot and go and spend a day with Jesus. And after Andrew's spent a day with Jesus, what's he do first? He goes and finds his brother Simon, Simon Peter. And he says to him, "We found the Messiah, that is the Christ." And he brought him to Jesus. Andrew was somebody who reached out to his family. Families are wonderful, and it's great to have quite a few gathered here today. Andrew discovered something about Jesus. So the first thing he does is he goes and finds his brother to tell him all about it. He brings his family in. And the next time we meet Andrew, very different scene. We're up in the north of the country. We're up in the hills, and Jesus is teaching a huge crowd of 5,000 people. And it's getting on late in the day, and Jesus says to Philip, "Where on earth are we going to find enough bread for everybody to have something to eat? This lot are starving. Where are we going to find enough for them to eat?" And Philip does his sort of mental calculation, says, "Well, even if we had 8 months' wages and we had a baker on site, still wouldn't be enough to buy everybody even a little bit." He's got it all worked out, and it doesn't work. And then it's Andrew who says, "Hey, I've got a small lad here who's got 5 loaves and 2 small fish. But they're not going to go very far, are they?" And it's at that point that Jesus says, "Make them sit down." And the feeding of the 5,000 follows. It's Andrew who sees in what that little lad brought the possibility of something happening with Jesus. It's great to have creche going on and work with young people and the school coming in. I don't know if they have a patron saint for children, but Andrew would be pretty high up the list. Most of the others would have just dismissed that young lad. Children didn't count terribly much in those days, least of all to save a major logistical problem of feeding 5,000. You wouldn't have gone to a child to sort it. But Andrew did. Andrew was the great includer of people, whether it was family or children. And then, of course, we move on to today and to the reading we had just now and to those Greeks. Because there's another group, as I say, feeling out of it. And who is it who includes them in? It's Andrew. Always on the lookout to include people in. People, other people would say, no. They're not terribly important. They don't count. They're not quite one of us. Or they can wait till they're different or older or something like that. And then they can be one of us. It's Andrew who includes them in. Whether it's the family or children or outsiders, Andrew's the great inviter and the includer in. And what's that all got to do with today, and particularly for those of you coming to confirmation? Well, I think it's got something to say about Christian discipleship and about being a Christian disciple. It's got something to say about being a Christian discipleship. Christian discipleship, very simply, is about being a follower of Jesus. That's what is at the centre of it all. Creeds, church, all these other things, they only make sense as we follow Jesus. That's at the heart of this service. Do you turn to Christ? I turn to Christ. Is Jesus at the centre? That's what it's all about. That's the mark of a Christian disciple. Trying to work out how we walk with Jesus through the whole of our lives. It's a lifetime's work for all of us. That's what Christian discipleship is all about. And the mark of a Christian disciple, simply, it's about introducing other people to Jesus. Those who people think are included and those people think aren't included. Because one thing we know, we will never see anybody in the whole of our lives who Jesus does not love. I sometimes think of that when I'm in London on the Underground. You know, at that point on the Underground where you don't need to stand because you're held up by everybody around you in the middle of the rush hour. And I look around and I just remind myself, there is no one here who God does not love. Who Jesus does not love. And our job as disciples is to introduce people in whatever way we can to Jesus. And each of you coming for confirmation today, you've got your own stories. No, don't worry, I'm not going to ask you to come out here and tell them. And you don't have to be a great theologian. Just in some way or other, to talk about what Jesus means to you. So tomorrow when somebody says, what were you doing yesterday then? Well, it was a nice day and I managed to get up in time. No, I got confirmed yesterday. What's that about? Gives us a chance to tell our stories. So what happened to those Greeks that Andrew took along and told Jesus about? And if you were following the story, it all becomes a bit odd at that point, because you'd kind of expect Jesus to say hello and what do you want, and there's none of that there. And we don't actually know what happened. And you can think, well, maybe they got a cold shoulder, but that doesn't make sense. Doesn't make sense to who Jesus was, doesn't make sense to who Andrew was. Because if Jesus had sort of missed out on them, you can be jolly sure Andrew would have been pushing them forward again and say, hey, hang on. And I think what happened next was they got so included in the group Jesus was talking to, that they didn't need to be referred to as a different group anymore. They were really in. They were part of the whole. And I don't know what happened to them after that day, what happened to them during that Holy Week leading up to Easter, what happened when they went back to their homes around the Mediterranean. What we do know is the Christian church spread extremely rapidly over the next 10, 20, 30 years. And very often, as it went to those different towns around the Mediterranean, yes, it was Jews who were becoming Christians, but it was also this kind of group of God-fearing Greeks who were really fertile soil for responding to the good news of Jesus. And I sometimes wonder if in Thessalonica and Corinth and Rome, some of those very earliest ones were people who that day had been taken by Andrew to meet with Jesus. Amen.